a shot in the dark. Wary sort of spark. I'm a light that's too bright for me to see.
Welcome back to The Counter Position. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Breadbox Media. All right, here we go, kids. Episode 244. Sorry, a little mic adjustment there. 244. So here we are on Monday on Dumpster Fire Eve. As I think we should like come up with a, you know, we should call it like Dumpfires Eve or something, like, you know, like some old timey holiday, like Halloween is All Hallows Eve, you know. We should like Dumpfire Eve, you know. It's like that was when we celebrate the day before the great dumpster fire that was the election of 2016. I told myself I wasn't even going to mention the election. I have came to a great peace that there's a certain peace to knowing that, oh, it's going to be some version of bad. And we're, however bad it is and which version of bad it is going to direct our work in the next 4 years. Because I have just finally become absolutely dedicated to whatever it takes, somehow creating something beautiful, some kind of real movement, probably around Catholic social doctrine, maybe jumping on to the American Solidarity Party and what's going on there, maybe just grassroots information and media promotion or something. I don't know, but there's a bunch of us that have been talking about this, and we have to start now to make something. I mean, I said this 4 years ago, not on the air because I didn't have a show then, but I was like, we have to start now, and we didn't, and look what we got. So we have to look to 2020. I just don't think there's nothing good can happen other than, you know, I'm looking at this election the way is it two, under two rubrics. One rubric is kind of like on, you know, on Wednesday morning, maybe depending how bad it is a few days later after recounts and all that. Maybe even way later if God moves and McMullen wins Utah and neither of these idiots get 270 and it goes to Congress or something, then that'd be interesting. Then it could be like, I would love to see both of these people just rebuked and denied what they wanted. But we'll see. I think that we're going to wake up and it's going to be like a man who is hungover after a bender of self-destructive behavior. And you're going to wake up with that sneaking feeling that you should have done something else, that we've just gotten to rock bottom. If we haven't already woke up with that feeling, I feel like that most days, politically and otherwise. But the other is, how to say it, it's kind of like the early church used to use the symbol of the grave and Christ dying and going into the tomb as, you know, that was the fish, and Christ went down into the fish, kind of prefigured by Jonah and the whale, and he went into the fish, and Satan catches the fish and tries to eat it, and he ends up, the bait. It wasn't the bait. It's like the bait, you know, and you just grab the bait, but then you get the hook. You grabbed Christ's humanity and his death, and you grab that as the bait, but the hook of his divinity was inside of it. And so I believe that the seeming just absolute dumpster fire nature of this, we're going to look back on and go, oh, and who would have known that God would have brought such beauty out of such ashes? You know, that it was, if we hadn't have gotten to that point, then people wouldn't be ready to hear X, Y, and Z. And that movement of A, B, and C wouldn't have happened. And the people that were pro such and such would have never sided with the people that were pro this and that. If it hadn't have been for, I think that we're going to look back and go, that's the best thing that could have happened to us. Maybe I'm being super optimistic, but I'm both hyper pessimistic. I'm optimistic that this is the worst thing that could possibly happen, so there's no way but up. How does that sound? Oh, man. All right. So for someone who wasn't going to talk about politics today, I'm talking about politics a lot, but from a very abstract level. I'm tired, so I'm sipping coffee in your ear today. I apologize. Let's do the chatty first segment, weekend recap. Friday night. Oh, my goodness. There's this day. There's this singer-songwriter named David Ramirez, and I hadn't really heard him. And I guess the kids in Communion and Liberation and the CL people had gotten turned on to, here in Denver, and had gotten turned on, or maybe nationally, had gotten turned on to some of his songs and started listening to this kind of this raw, beautiful engagement of reality, this raw kind of longing and very earthy, real questioning and longing kind of music. And they had started singing some of his songs, and I think he even included him in the songbook. And so he came to Denver, and I got invited to go. So we went down. It was me and Ducky and the rest of the CL peeps, and then Perry West and Adrian Mishak, also known as Feathers. You know, so Perry and Feathers met us down there. Shout out to Feathers. Such an inside joke. It was incredible. It was at the Larimer Lounge, which, by the way, my goodness, that part of Rhino in general, I knew was kind of on the up. That's River North for, you know, R-I-N-O, Rhino, River North. Rhino has been really on the upswing, I knew, but I just didn't understand. Until a couple weeks ago when I met the person that does my drafting for Calyx, my new drafts person, down at Park Burger for dinner. I had no idea how much it had popped down there around Walnut and that area. It's like the Larimer Lounge and that, you used to be able to get pretty easy parking to go to a show there or something. It was just insane now. It's just completely just exploding down there in that part of lower downtown, that part of Denver. Or it's north of Lodo. It's called River North, and it's just exploding right now. But anyway, so there's an urban transformation aside. So we went down to Larimer Lounge to see David Ramirez, and boy, was it amazing. So I missed the first couple songs. I was exhausted. I was coming off of my insomnia that you guys heard me rant about. And I didn't get to take a nap. So I went home and I finally, like, look, I'm going to take a nap. And I messed up the AM PM and I slept till like 9 o'clock. Show was starting like 9:30. And I got woke up at like 9:05, 9:10 by someone calling me to ask me where I was. Oh goodness. So I ran down there and promptly. So I ended up, man, I tell you what, this just makes me mad. I'm at this incredible show. This is absolutely amazing show. Just there's something so incredible about this one guy, an acoustic guitar, three chords, and the truth, or at least three chords and some ardent longing for the truth, mixed in with the truth and raw human experience and engagement with the real. And, you know, rock and roll is about desire. It's about longing. And I talked about that on Friday some. And this guy just oozes it, man. He wants it, you know. He's desiring reality, and he knows he's broken, and he's singing about his brokenness, and it's just incredible. It's just beautiful music. David Ramirez, man, check it out. So good. But there's these girls with their boyfriends, and they're a little drunk, and they just kept... Every time they just kept going, yes, yes, do it, yes. They're like laughing like some inside joke, saying YAASS, like they don't need it. They're like, yes, like it's so good, yes. And the other girl go, do it. Like they just, I don't know what they were doing. It was some inside joke with some internet derivative thing. And they kept doing it the whole dang show. I was so ready to just turn around and snap and just, oh my gosh. Here's some guy so ripping out his heart, sewing it on his sleeve and letting everyone have a look at it on stage. And these drunk little idiot girls are just screaming. They might as well have been yelling hashtag something. It's just total internet derivative stuff. And it was just absolutely amazing. But in the middle of all that, you know, he kind of addressed that same kind of thing. David has a song, and he said, one of the truest lines I've seen and heard in a long time. He said, I don't play to people anymore. I play to their phones. It's hard to have a holy moment when you try to take it home. And I tell you what, man, that just so much that you can't be in the moment and documenting the moment at the same time, or it's really hard to do. You can't be just in the moment enjoying that beautiful meal with your friends if you're busy taking pictures of your food for Instagram and putting pictures of each of you, like, you know, taking turns, taking pictures of each other and stuff. It's just, it's hard to have a holy moment when you try to take it home. There's a certain kind of humility and a certain kind of asceticism in not multitasking, you know, in not capturing what you're experiencing. Just going, no, I'm going to have this for a moment. I'm going to have this conversation. I'm going to have this moment. I'm going to have this sunset. I'm going to have her looking like this right now, sitting there. I'm going to have this song. I'm going to have this strange coincidence. And the only place I'm ever going to have it is inside me, in my memory, in my imagination. But in that way, I can really experience it. I can really be here now. Those old hippies were onto something, man. Be here now. And I think it's hard to do that and capture it. And he said so many true things, but I think that was the line of the night that I came away with. So, yeah, so there you go. David Ramirez. If you haven't listened to David Ramirez, I would definitely suggest checking it out. I haven't listened to him much besides that one show. So I'm going to get out on Spotify and listen to a bunch of stuff and then buy some music, support that guy. Anyway, so let's go to the break. You're listening to The Counterposition. I am your host, Andrew Wade. See you on the other side.
Let my sacred word to mutter. Ran too fast and turned to butter. I'm a bit too much for me to chew.
If you enjoy listening to Andrew Whaley on The Counterposition, you should become a friend of the show. Go to breadboxmedia.com and click on Friend of the Show to provide your support. Thank you.
Let me skip across the pond. I'm an ocean on and on. I'm a fish with no bowl that I outgrew. Lift my blood. See, only one on track.
Welcome back to The Counterposition. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Breadbox Media. And I am musing and ranting my way through the weekend recap here. You might ask, after doing your show, why on Friday did you not get to, I don't know if I even mentioned this, why on Friday did I not get my nap in the afternoon that I was dying for? Because I had to wait for a plumber who was supposed to be here from working from 3 to 5. But it turns out 3 to 5 is the window when they show up. Okay, my bad. I didn't understand that. So I just got to wait. And he's going to show up and start working somewhere between 3 and 5. So he shows up at 6 and starts to snake the drain that we were having trouble with, this drain going from our espresso machine over to the floor drain, and realizes that it's all broken inside before he can even get it started. It's all just completely disconnected, and that's why we were having this big leak. So this little, like, it'll take 30 minutes drain snake turned into, we can't even do this today because I'm going to have a real plumber come out and do all this. So I ended up spending the bulk of my Saturday during the day sitting around waiting on a plumber, and then watching a plumber work, and then paying a plumber. And so then Sunday got in after the glue had all dried, put the drain back in, fired it up, and it overflowed all over the counter. So evidently it was stopped up. We just couldn't find out if it was stopped up until we repaired the stopped up drain. So now I'm waiting after I record today on a third visit from the same plumber from the same place, or it's another plumber from the same place, to clear this drain and figure out what's going on with our drainage. So super happy about that. Yeah. So, hey, going back to Friday night reminds me that I forgot something I was supposed to bring when I came down. And what I was supposed to bring was something for David Ramirez. And what was I supposed to bring? I was supposed to bring the new Perry West CD. So, I told you this is out already. Never mind. Anyway, Perry West's new record's out. a half glass full. PerryWestMusic.com, I believe. Just Google Perry West. An amazing record, a beautiful physical CD if you want to buy a CD, especially if you're here in Denver. Perry's carrying a box around with him most of the time. So if you're in Denver and you know Perry and you're a listener, just ask him for one. If not, you can go online. I think they're like $10 for CDs and $6 for downloads. But a half glass full. And now that we've been waiting for it to come out, now that it's going to be out, Perry and I are going to sit down and actually do a show. And so, so we're going to do probably like a double show and do an interview. Hopefully this week. He's all stoked on it and I'm stoked on it. And we live together. So it shouldn't be that hard to make it happen. Anyway, Perry West, a half glass full, amazing new record that's out. So let's see. I skipped ahead to the plumbing saga and gave it to you all in one shot. David Ramirez. Man, you know what? After David Ramirez, I was standing out by the food truck getting a burrito, and I came closer to getting into a physical altercation, like an actual fight, than I have in a very, very long time. There's just some guy with a couple of bros. And there's this guy with his girl, and I was standing there. They were standing there trying to figure out what to order. When these guys walked up behind them, they were there first, and all of a sudden this drunk guy decides that they had cut in line. And he was just talking so, saying such rude, horrible stuff about this woman and about her boyfriend and to her boyfriend about, and just like, and his, and he was just posturing for his bros. And oh man, I mean, if he wasn't like, you know, he was like 6'5", 6'6", wasn't intoxicated enough to give me the edge, and he had two guys with him, but they seemed like they were shaking it off pretty good, and they weren't being physically threatening. So, I mean, I was so upset listening to this guy treat someone like that I just, for the first time in a really long time, I really, really, really could feel myself inside kind of starting to make the decision that I was going to step up and say something and do something about this. I'm just like, gosh, man, that is such a visceral, weird situation to be in. Yeah. So that was an interesting deal right there, man. So you know what? Be a man. Don't be a bro. Don't be a little boy. Don't be a guy. Be a man. Men respect people even when they're in the wrong. So if you think they cut in front of you, you know, don't be a doormat in this world, but be gracious. Maybe you didn't notice them. Anyways, I hate that. I hate when someone gets that kind of reaction out of me, because I get angry easily, but I'm not the kind of person that gets angry to the point of, like, you know, that kind of feeling towards violence. I mean, I'm not that kind of person. And man, I tell you what, that got my goat. So Saturday, after getting up, waiting for, and then babysitting a plumber, I went to see Doctor Strange. So met up with Shiny the Warrior Princess, or Xena the Disney Princess, take your pick, and the lovely and talented Ross Golish, chef extraordinaire, her brother, and all kinds of people, including the quitter, Sarah Stacy. Which, by the way, it turns out that I just wanted to let everybody know that. So on my last show, I attempted to interview a Post-it note, and it did not go very well. So I now know why that didn't go well. Other than Post-it notes are inanimate objects and can't talk back, right? I mean, and I knew that, but this one's asked me to be on the show. It said, put me on your show, and it was signed S. I thought the Post-it note's name was S, and so I tried to interview S, the Post-it note, and it didn't go well because the Post-it note, not surprisingly, didn't say anything. It turns out S was Sarah Stacy. She put that note on the arm of my microphone arm in my studio here, and because she wanted to be on the show, but she didn't sign her full name. So it turns out that was Sarah Stacy, not a Post-it note trying to get interviewed. But anyway, the post-it noting quitting Sarah Stacy was also there at Doctor Strange. And so I want to talk about, so here is spoiler alert. I'm going to talk about Doctor Strange a little bit. I'm not going to go deep into it. There are some really deep plot things kind of happening that I'm interested in. I may watch it a second time and talk about. I am really interested with kind of where things are going in the Marvel universe, but that's not what I want to talk about today. I just got some general ideas after watching Doctor Strange, more about how things that are supernatural or above the natural or mystical in some way are portrayed in modern media, especially in like sci-fi and fantasy superhero stuff. So Doctor Strange, if you're not familiar with the story from the comic books and all that, is a surgeon. And or this is how it goes down in the movie. I don't really remember the background on Doctor Strange, but he was a surgeon and lost his hands in a car wreck. I mean, they were all beat up, and he was, you know, so he's searching through all the stuff trying to get his movement back, and he ends up over in Tibet or Nepal. I mean, and he goes to these gurus, and there's this woman called the Ancient One, who is Tilda Swinton in the movie. And the Ancient One, there was a lot of debate over this about, because they made her a Celtic person in the movie, and she was Tibetan, or he was Tibetan in the comic books. And there was some question whether Marvel did that over not wanting to make the movie hard to sell in China. And but as someone pointed out, the Ancient One is a title in the comic books, and there's been several Ancient Ones. And so the one that they chose was this bald-headed Tilda Swinton, who was Celtic, and nobody knew how old she was or whatever. Anyway, so he goes over there, and you know, but what's interesting is that I want to talk about, the main thing that I want to talk about is, it's interesting, they kind of showed some stuff that looks really, really platonic and very, very kind of Gnostic, in the sense that, you know, there's a point at which his astral body gets knocked out of his body, and then later on his astral body is outside of him. He's pulled out of it while he's dying on a table, and he's talking to people and stuff and all this. So there's kind of that platonic Gnostic thing. But here's what's interesting is that, and this is just kind of what got me thinking, and this is really all I want to explore on it right now, is that how hylomorphic, I mean, we're hylomorphic beings, we're body soul composites, and that's kind of the opposite of that platonic kind of eternal wispy spirit trapped in this prison of flesh thing, you know, that we are our bodies in a sense, right? But what was interesting is that when he was in his astral state and his body was dying on the table, they hit him with paddles, and that affected his astral self, so to speak. Like this big power went through him or something like that. And he was fighting this other guy in an astral form, and it was helping him when they would hit him. It would like affect the other guy. And so it's funny. It's and that got me thinking about some of the religions that we think about as being the most, there seems to be an instinct in this, even when your doctrine has transmigration of souls and the soul being separate from the body and all that. It's interesting that, I mean, look at like Hinduism, right? What's all that yoga about? It's like, you know, how do these positions and changing things in your body and flexibility and all that, how does that affect, you know, your spirit, if there isn't like a deep interaction between the two, you know, stuff like that. I just, you know, fasting possibly, or all the ascetic practices that are in all these world religions. It seems like they put out a doctrine, it looks very Gnostic, it looks very platonic, but then in the way they get there is very hylomorphic. There's a lot of body involved in that. So, all right, we'll pick this up on the other side of the break. You're listening to The Counterposition. I am your host, Andrew Whaley.
Then how we crave a hanging in the dark.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
People singing, please don't stay, but please don't go.
Welcome back to The Counterposition. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Breadbox Media. All right, so that's the... I was talking about Doctor Strange and about how there was a few scenes in there that really kind of made me think about how you can't really get away from hylomorphism, you know, body-soul composite-ness of our existence, even when you try to have a religion that is more Gnostic. The body rears its ugly head and you have to do something with it. So either you have to fast it into submission, or that's kind of a Platonic Gnostic thing to do or whatever, or you just be an absolute libertine because you think that your body, what you do in the body doesn't matter. It's not real. So you can do whatever you want, you know, booze, drugs, sex, whatever. It doesn't matter because your body doesn't matter and the physical world matter doesn't matter. But we as Catholics believe that matter matters. And I would argue that at least when it, most religions, it seems like the way they act, they think that matter matters. So they do some yoga, or they sit in a certain position and say a certain thing and ring a certain bell or do something to get into a meditative state. It seems like, now maybe some of this is to kind of calm the body and get the prison out of the way, so to speak. But some of it, like what got me started on this Hindu thing is that I was up in Flint in a coffee house, and this girl was reading this book and had kind of a weird word on the front of it. And I thought maybe it was the author. And so I kind of saw what she was reading. And so I Googled it to see what it was. And it was something having to do with energy and chakras and the muscle in your pelvic floor and how you exercise this and open this up and strengthen something. So your energy isn't leaking out of your bottom or whatever. It's like, it's literally what it was saying. But I'm like, well, why at the, wait a minute, how's this energy all hooked in? And there was a pretty cool moment where, in Doctor Strange, where she shows him a book. She says, have you ever seen this diagram? And it was like that classic chakra diagram. And he's like, chakra? Seriously? I see that in the gift shop. And then she shows him like this acupuncture thing and then an MRI. And she says that these are all people who see only a part of the overall reality. They're grasping it just a part, but they don't see the whole. And then she like pushes his astral form out of himself, and then he gets sucked back in, and then she does it again, and he goes on this big, crazy, mind-bending journey, which, as best I can tell, was the which most of the movie was about. Hey, look what we can do with CGI now. It was some really crazy graphics. He went on this big, like, trippy, interdimensional journey, you know, and then he comes back, and he comes slamming back into his body, and she looks at him and says, so did you see that in a gift shop? I kind of like that as kind of an overdone version of like spiritual experience, when it's like, oh, this stuff isn't real. And then something really, really real happens to you. Kind of like Neo in the Matrix, when he wakes up from that dream and then they put him in the car and then they say, well, first we have to get that thing out of you. And they try to get that squid looking thing out, that mechanical thing that the agents put in him, and he's like, that thing's real. And then he sees it when they pull it out. All of a sudden you're like, oh man, the thing that I thought was imaginary is real, you know. So that kind of happened. That was kind of a cool part of the movie too. It's kind of the showing of invisible reality through graphic stuff. You know, if you're into comic books and you're into like trippy, if you're into comic book superheroes, trippy stuff, Doctor Strange is worth going to. And the CGI on this thing, when they show how like reality and dimensions can be bent and time can change, and they, all these buildings like turn into like kind of clockwork and like changing like gears and stuff and like fold in on themselves and stuff. A super cool effect. Really one of the very Inception meets Matrix kind of a thing. Bizarre. Anyway, Doctor Strange, that's a, there's a lot to think about there. And there's a really interesting plot situation and the use of the word natural law in there that I want to talk about at some point, but I want to watch it again before I start doing reviews and talking about what I think about that. So moving on from Doctor Strange, What else? So went to Holy Protection for Divine Liturgy this weekend. Good as always. It was cool. We had a visiting priest celebrating, and Father Michael was kind of celebrating. And it was one of the guys, I think, from the Community of the Beatitudes, Father Anthony of the Transfiguration, which, you know, what a cool name. Anthony. Hey, what's your name? I'm Bob. Oh, I'm Susie. Hey, what's your name? Oh, I'm Anthony. I'm Brother Anthony of the Transfiguration. I want a cool name like that. Do you have to you know, take vows and stuff? Do you have to be a religious to get that cool of a name? But I mean, I think if you take a name, you have to be honest. It's not that they won't allow you, but if you're not like holy and you're not like, you know, you're not taking like a serious consecration like that, then they make you name yourself. So I think I would be, remember, when Jesus tells him to go, before he enters Nazareth, he says, go and you'll find a donkey tied up that has never been ridden, and bring it to me. I want to be Andrew of the unridden ass. I guess says a lot, you know. I'm stubborn and I refuse to carry the Lord where he wants to go. I'm Andrew of the unridden ass. I mean, that's going to be my new that's my new name. I'm going to change my driver's license. it's going to make voting fun. As if we're doing that. I'm not saying who I'm voting for. I refuse to do it. I've gotten to where I'm just completely, people are asking me what I'm doing wherever. This is the first time in a long time that everyone is asking each other who they're voting for. I'm not going to vote for anyone. I'm not going to admit to voting for anyone. I'm being apolitical at this point, until we build something new. there was an aside. Said I wasn't going to talk about politics, but I did again. So Brother Anthony, or Father Anthony, I guess, Father Anthony of the almost gave him my name, of the Transfiguration, was celebrating. And so that was a good time. I finally sat up front because I got in late and there was no books around. And so I wasn't distracted by grabbing a book and trying to follow along. And I realized that I actually have memorized a really good chunk of the Divine Liturgy, and I was able to just sing. And then when I didn't have the book, I just let it go and let people sing if they knew it. And I actually enjoyed it and got into it and was in it more. So there you go. Like, maybe I'm just going to not pick up the book from now on, figure it out as I go. So other than that, the Raiders destroyed the Broncos. That was painful. Yeah, that was brutal. That was a rough. I mean, that was a high scoring game too. I tell you what, the Raiders defense is just, wow, kind of serious. It was a good game. It was a really good game. But I'm trying to get like myself good and attached to the Broncos, and I'm feeling it a little bit. But I just want, you know, I want a team to win this year after watching the Cardinals get knocked out and then the evil Cubs winning. You know, congrats to the Cubs. I keep saying that. Congrats to you. Well done. That was the weekend. That was what happened. So, last thing I want to talk about is, so remember, I want to continue my saga of, the Mac storage issue. So if you remember right, if you were following along with the home game, I had less than 2 gigabytes of storage left on my computer, and I would do nothing. I would just search. I would just Google, you know, kind of look around and, you know, write some emails and, you know, attach a couple files to an email, not even have my computer. And I would lose like half a gig. You know, it would be in this other. It was just half my computer was other. And it turns out there's a bunch of purgeable files and stuff in there and everything. So I figured out that Mac OS, the new Mac Sierra, has this optimized storage performance stuff. And so I tried to download it, didn't have enough room to download it. So I went on a deleting binge, got rid of a bunch of stuff, you know, some apps I wasn't using and stuff like that. Cleared out enough room to download Mac OS Sierra. And so after updating to Sierra, I immediately had like 20 gigs left. And then, and some of that was what is temporary files that are purgeable. So if it can be written over and it's no big deal, if it's just a useless file that's just hanging out there, they kind of like learned how to classify that. And so, yeah, so I put in 4 gigs of almost 5 gigs of new operating system, rebooted it and picked up 20 gigs. So now the only problem is then of course something always goes wrong, right? Now my Wi-Fi started acting weird. So I Googled it. Sure enough, there's some issue with updating the Sierra and your Wi-Fi connectivity and speed. So I had to go in and delete config files and stuff and redo them and stuff, which scares the heck out of me because I am not a tech guy. So digging around in config files based on some article is the fastest way to freak me out, man. But I did it and it seems like it worked okay. So if any of you were just losing sleep over whether or not I was running out of space on my computer, hey, if I run out of too much space, it wouldn't even let me update. It wouldn't let me attach files. And then you wouldn't have the counter position. So you should, if you like the show, you should be concerned about my storage. All right, when we get back, I got something I want to talk about regarding cell phones and whatnot, and some ideas that I had over the weekend. And you're listening to The Counter Position. I'm your host, Andrew Whaley. We'll be right back.
Then all the color glass that painter's palette smash, all the colors of my soul.
If you enjoy listening to Andrew Whaley on The Counter Position, you should become a friend of the show. Go to breadboxmedia.com and click on Friend of the Show to provide your support. Thank you.
I'm a hyena laughing fool. I'm a hero without anyone to save. Love decked myself in toys. I'm a poor and kingly boy. Oh, I'm lovely, and I'm dull.
Welcome back to The Counter Position. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Breadbox Media. All right, so, okay, before I go into my idea that I had, I want to do a shout out to John and Ami. These two folks came in from Casper, Wyoming today. They came into the shop at the Augustan Institute, and I could see him picking up my card for Calyx and saying, oh, hey, this is what I was talking about, this Calyx thing. And they were talking about Calyx, and I was like, and I guess he could finally see that I was kind of like making their coffee and kind of staring at him talking about Calyx. And finally he goes, are you Andrew Whaley? And I was like, well, it depends on who's asking. No, I admitted to it right up. I said, no, I am Andrew of the Unwritten S. And he looked at me strange. No, I didn't say that. How cool would that be to have that name? I should wait until I'm holier and then get a better name than that. Oh, I'm tickling myself today. Anyway, so these people had been in Crux Coffee up in Lander, Wyoming at Wyoming Catholic. Shout out to Crux Coffee and all of the amazing people in Lander, Wyoming. And they loved the shop and went online and looked at the school and saw on the website that their shop was built with the help of the consulting help of Calyx. And so when they came to Denver, they looked, they wanted to see another Calyx shop. So they came here and they ended up meeting me, who is the founder of Calyx. And it was great because they were really interested. And I talked a lot. I just started preaching to Calyx vision and how it all works and why it's important and doing the thing that I do if you'll hold still long enough and act interested. And they seemed actually interested and they enjoyed talking to me. And I really, 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 really love meeting someone who has heard about what we're doing or experienced it and loved it and cared and who really gets it. And so this is John and his wife is Ami. I can't remember how she pronounced it exactly. So I apologize for screwing up your name on the air. And she's a painter, and she does icons, and she does all these oils and portraiture and stuff. So I turned her on to Allie Cavanaugh. Shout out to Allie. And I turned her on to Elizabeth Zelasco, my friend who does amazing icons up in Fort Collins and all kinds of other incredible painting. And so I told her, I was able to tell her about two other, like, Catholic homeschool moms who are incredible artists that, and I'm going to try to connect them up. So see, telling you, Calix causes community one cup at a time, one cup at a time. So that was fun. Yeah. I got a kick out of that. And they told me that they were at Crux, and they're like, hey, we want you to know that whatever you did there, whatever you built there, it's still going on. The coffee and the, it was amazing. The hospitality was incredible. The space was beautiful. Everybody was so great. It was a really great experience. It's going on, you know, and I'm like, that's, I love that. I love what I do. I love when I get to help build a place, get to help make something, and then it carries on without me and does amazing stuff with the hard work of all these amazing people that are involved in it. So yay, yay, Calix, yay me. and now they're going to listen to the counter position. So I probably should get made a better show today for their first show. But they were amazing people. They were really sweet and really, really kind, very thoughtful, really meaningful. I'm starting to talk like Trump. I'm really tired. I talk like Trump when I'm tired. Great people, really great people, amazing, really good, really meaningful people, incredible, the best. They're huge. does that count as talking about politics? I think it does. I said I wasn't going to talk about politics. All right, so. David Ramirez, the singer-songwriter from Friday Night, mentioned, if you didn't hear the quote earlier, if you're just tuning in, I went and saw a singer-songwriter named David Ramirez, and he had a line in one of his songs that said, and it was great because there was all these people filming him when he said this. And he kind of joked about it afterwards because they all kind of like put him down. He said, because the line was, I don't play to people anymore, I play to their phones. It's hard to have a holy moment when you want to take it home. And so that's got me thinking about, it kind of brought back up an idea that I've been having. So, you know, you've heard me talk about cell phones a lot and about how we're also distracted and how, you know, it takes us out of community and kind of everything. Well, here's the insight that I had. Because I've been kind of a defender of digital community as real community, and I experience digital community as real community. I say something on the air, and then people are texting me or emailing me or praying for me or mention it when I bump into them, and we have a conversation in person over a glass of wine about something I said on the air because they were listening. Or, you know, a friend of mine that I care about that if he lived down the street I'd have coffee with every week lives 1,000 miles away, and we're both saying meaningful things in a thread on Facebook about some article that someone posted. So, I mean, I think it's real community. Now, here's the thing, though. There's a book, I think it's by Terkel, the same person that just, I just bought the book, Reclaiming Conversation, but I haven't read it yet. So get ready for more of this because I'm about to read Reclaiming Conversation. But there's a book called Alone Together. And there's this idea floating around that we used to be in community when we were in a place, but now we're just distracted by our phones. So we're all alone, but we're in the same place. Right. And I talked about that. If you remember, I was talking about I was arguing with Ann Bryling about whether we should have, internet in Shrine Coffee in, Santa Cruz. And she really wanted to not have it, and or at least sometimes not have it. And I was saying, you have to do it. Then we walked into Red Rocks Coffee in Mountain View, and there was just like this banquet full of people with headphones on, all with the same laptops, plugged in like drones, staring at screens. And this coffee house was packed, and it was just almost silent because everyone was just on their laptops with headphones in. And I was like, I remember what coffee houses used to look like back in the 90s, back in the late 80s and early 90s, mid 90s, you know, where people spoke to each other. They sat around, you would read books and write in your journal and have conversations. And, you know, it was a feverish conversational place, and that's what it should be, right? And so I've been thinking about that. And then it started dawning on me the way, as I noticed the way I was using it. And that is that we're not alone together. Each of those people that are all plugged in like drones along that banquette and that coffee house, they are together in physical proximity with a bunch of people. They are in the same place as a bunch of people. And they are in community. And they are actively engaging and participating in community. It's just not with the people they're around. It's like we've become our own little states. We're our own little collectives. And my collective sits next to your collective. And we have this feverish, vigorous level of community with comments and phone calls and texts. And we're really, really connected to a bunch of people, maybe more than we used to be. So in some ways, we're in more community. In some ways, we're in too much community. We're too connected in some way to the people. But what's interesting is because of that, we're not connected to the people around us. We're there, and I'm there, and I'm with you, and we're in community, but not with each other. And that is pretty interesting to me. That's because here's the thing is that how many times have you been at a party or you're at a coffee house or you're someplace and this is before cell phones, right? Some of you can't remember before cell phones. You're too young. But you're at a party and the people that there's nobody there that you really know. And the people that you kind of want to be talking to aren't there. So you get bored and you talk to somebody else that maybe you look at them and you're like, this guy's going to be boring, or I don't want to talk to this guy. This guy's going to be an idiot or whatever. But the fact that they're the only ones that you're bored and lonely and they're the only ones there. So you talk to them and you have some community with them and you end up meeting someone new or finding out something you would have never found out about or getting a different perspective on something. You end up being brought out of your little shell and over into someone else's world. And you get to engage with someone that you wouldn't have engaged with before, maybe voluntarily. Well, we don't ever have to do that anymore for the most part. If you're sitting in the doctor's office and there's someone sitting next to you and you don't want to talk to them, you just pull out your phone and you talk to all the people that you wish were sitting in the doctor's office with you. But I think we're missing out on something there. Now I'm saying this as someone who spends all day making small talk with strangers behind a bar, or having meaningful conversations with strangers. I had a really meaningful conversation with strangers today that gave them a shout out a while ago. They came in from Wyoming and blew my mind with, you know, how thoughtful and how interested they were and how kind they were as I was just started preaching about everything under the sun, about my vision and what's going on and what I think is so important. And, you know, it's just, if I would have seen these people, I mean, actually they looked like the kind of people that I would hang out with. So I probably would have been interested in them. But let's say people come in and you're like, oh, that guy's in a suit and he doesn't get it. Or that person isn't cool or whatever, you know, and you don't talk to them. You just sink into your phone and you talk to someone else. Right. Well, I think we're missing something there. So I'm all for digital community, but I'm not for digital community replacing the instinct or the getting wrapped up in physical proximity community. So, you know, comment on Facebook, but talk to the person sitting next to you in a shop. That's the moral of the story. All right, there you go. That's all I got. And there ain't no more, as my aunt used to say. You're listening to The Counter Position. Let's pull the plug, pop the cork on another episode, and I'll see you on the other side.
I'll take your place, marble stone. I'll take your place, marble stone.